Welcome to the Misguidance Podcast. We're your hosts, Daniel, Lana,
and on occasion, Morgan,
serve up a weekly slice of life's chaos casserole. We're like that GPS that confidently yells, recalculating, just as you pass the last exit before the toll.
Join us and our guests as we navigate the potholes of personal predicaments and maybe, just maybe, find the right exit together.
Stay tuned and remember, every misstep is just a detour on the road to wisdom. Or at least that's what we tell ourselves.
All right. Welcome to the Misguidance Podcast. We have Daniel.
Hello.
Molly. Hi. Our guest, Aftan. And of course, I'm Lana. Glad to have you all here with us today. Aftan is here with us to talk about whatever they want to talk about. Some community involvement, probably some comedy.
Yeah. I could start out and just like ask you to tell us a little bit about Community Collabs.
Yeah, for sure. Community Collabs is a project that I started, honestly out of angst and frustration, from just like my current situation in New Orleans. I had just, started doing comedy. At the time I was dating a burlesque performer that had just kind of broken out into the industry, and we both were feeling really frustrated just at how we were getting paid, how the shows were being run, and so Community Collaborative came honestly from that frustration. We were just kind of like, what if we did our own show, like what if we had our own party and we made sure that everyone that was involved was treated fairly. And that was kind of the basis for the idea. And now it's grown into what it is today. And that was like, I guess a little over a year ago.
Yeah. I love that, you know, you've brought that to Jackson. I actually used to be a burlesque dancer.
Yeah, that's
cool. In Nashville years ago. But yeah, I love that. And, you know, because I feel like I've only been here a year, but I feel like that was like a much needed thing, you know, something to bring communities together, like get some intersectional things going on.
Word. Are you from Mississippi? Are you from Jackson?
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm not. I'm from Meridian.
Word.
Yeah. I grew up in Meridian.
Yeah. I'm from Brandon. So just right around here.
Yeah,
that's where I grew up. So
kind of Jackson.
Yeah, kind of Jackson. Yeah. Like Jackson Light, Jackson White.
Yeah. Jackson. Oh, no, not the white flight. But yeah, the white flight.
It's a little bit.
All right, thanks for coming, everyone. We're immediately canceled.
No, it's okay. No, don't cancel us. I baited.
Tell us about some of the things that y'all have done so far. I know I've done the comedy open mic that's at Briarwood Arts Center. What else?
Oh, yeah. So, ironically, when I started this whole thing in New Orleans, I started off booking rappers and DJs. So, when I moved to Jackson, I kind of just felt like I didn't need to be booking any more fucking rappers. Can I cuss?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah. We insist upon it.
I was like, dang it, this is the second time this podcast has been canceled. Yo, but we started off booking rappers and DJs. And when I moved to Jackson, I noticed rather immediately that there were no raves here. And I find myself, when I first moved back, those first few months, I was driving to New Orleans and driving to Memphis to go to raves. And by the time I would, I'd gas, Airbnb, eat out every day. At that point, I could have just booked a DJ to come to Jackson and throw a rave here. So I just kind of was just like, let's just try to experiment with something different. I didn't start off throwing raves, and I didn't start off producing comedy open mics either. So it just kind of, I guess, organically grew into something that I felt like the market, or just Jackson, our community — it's not a market, it's a community — what we needed. I think comics needed more than just one mic a week, and we needed an all comedy mic just to really bomb, you know, before we take it to the workout room and maybe bomb a little more. So
yeah. I The rave y'all put on was actually the first rave I ever went to.
That's so cool. Yo, that's so cool.
It was so fun.
What was your experience like?
I loved it. I really did. I know some people that I invited were like, I don't know about that area.
Fair.
And like, maybe I'm just like, you know, new and
naive.
It's like, I don't know any better. It's fine.
No, I was very, I guess, amazed at the amount of trust that you all had given me.
I did feel safe. Dude, I did feel really safe.
Thank you. Like, that's really cool. That's exactly what I wanted. I knew I was asking for a lot of trust, but that's kind of what it's about in a sense. It was a secret location rave. And then when you found out, it wasn't much better. Like, you really had to go, like, be there and see and what it was about.
Yeah,
so
cool. I can't wait till it grows into, like, a larger space.
Ooh, I plan to. We are trying to. I've met some other curators in Jackson. Shout out to Kim Shady and Alexis Noble. They are, like, two awesome curators here that have experience crafting events on a larger scale. And they've been really just, like, welcoming and helpful and just inviting me into their space and asking me for what kind of support I need. And ultimately, I would love to bring what we're doing you know, on a small scale, bring it to a bigger scale, introduce it to more people. And so I'm just really thankful that I found some people who were interested in what I was doing and wanted to help out. So maybe one day, I think it'll happen.
How long have you been back in Jackson from New Orleans?
Ooh, so I got all my stuff out of that house in New Orleans probably at the end of August last year. So
okay,
it's been relatively new. But I've been, like, amazed. Honestly, I've had my foot in my mouth the whole time I've been here. I was really bummed to move back home. I was like, oh, you know, damn it, Jackson, they don't have an underground scene. There is no scene. And it was actually quite literally the opposite. So I'm really grateful.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised this in the same way, because I'm, like, moving from Nashville to back to Mississippi to Jackson. And, like, I immediately start doing something that I've always wanted to do with stand-up, mm-hmm. you know. I immediately found a supportive friend group, you know. I'm still having trouble in the tattoos, but,
In what way?
I don't know. Maybe it's my personality.
I'm joked. Okay. We can unpack that later.
But, I have plans to also just start my own space, you know, so I don't have that. I don't have a problem, like, with my own personality.
I hear you. Like, I work at a dispensary, but also, like, do a lot of freelance work. I'm not, like, the best coworker. Like, I'm not a bad coworker. I just don't enjoy having coworkers, truly. Like, and I think that's okay too. Like, a lot of tattoo artists run their shops. It's just a solo shop and they're successful. Like,
yeah, it, I guess, like, my problem is being told what to do.
Per. I don't like that shit.
I don't like being told what to do. No, like, especially when you're not paying me hourly. Like, ooh, and you're taking part of my commission.
Ouch.
And you have the audacity to tell me what to do.
It's a little like, what the hell? And then I have to ask you if I can go, like, eat lunch right now. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. No, it was like, can I leave? Like, they'd be like, yeah, sure. After you wipe down the baseboards in this area that we're trying to paint.
That's crazy. And all these janitorial companies, and you want me to wipe the baseboards. That's crazy.
Or, like, maybe ask somebody that made money today. I don't know.
Literally. Wait,
yeah.
What? Yeah.
I feel like I'm the opposite. I love rules. I like to know what I'm getting into at all times. Like, tell me what to do.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, they told me something different. And then when I got there.
Yeah.
I can deal with deception. Like, with rules, like, you know, checklists. I love a checklist.
Ooh.
I do.
Yeah. Ooh, baby.
I know. I'm speaking your language. I
turn
love
on
a checklist, especially if it's color-coded. I don't know. Like,
checking stuff off a list is like a dopamine hit, free dopamine.
Come on now. It's nice. But it's just something about, like, checking off the list, and it's like, I don't know if the person that I just checked off that box for really appreciates it. You know what I mean? That's
sort of
my mind.
Oh, no, for me, I like to know what I'm doing at all times. So, like, give
Daddy?
Me a rule. Huh?
Daddy?
No, hair
not like that. But I mean, you can also tell me what to do in the bedroom. So
it's giving submissive. It's giving sub. We stand. That's so funny.
Let's unpack that.
What podcast is this? Just by the way, I love it.
I feel like it's very obvious that I'm naturally a brat, but like also people act like they want that and they don't.
I'm joked. You're a certain type of person to handle a brat. I feel like everyone wants a brat, but when it comes
they
down
don't.
To it, they don't
they
actually
don't.
Want.
Yeah,
a brat.
They're just like they don't actually want a funny girl.
Yeah. Oh no, really? Oh. They're like, damn it, she has a personality. Wait.
Yeah. And they actually don't want an independent girl either.
I know it's difficult. I feel like for some men to navigate, like it's like, yes, I have this submissive, this bratty person, but they also have their own autonomy, and you know they have like, you know, just their twinks, and you don't want to exploit that, and like there's just like a balance to it. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So I had a question that kind of leads into this. What's the queer dating scene like in Jackson?
It's pretty terrible.
It's bad.
Yeah, I had this like joke that I used it in a tight 10 last year about how Jackson has like 3 gay girls, and I had already fallen out with all of them, so I had to like, move to New Orleans basically to like just go find some new people to date. And I'm back in Jackson. But instead of 3 gay girls, there's 6.
Right.
And so there's the 3 that I've fallen out with, you know, and I've fallen out with 2 more now.
Okay.
And I think there's probably, you know, 1 person that's gay that I just haven't met yet.
Just yeah. 1 more left.
So whenever we fall out, you know, I'll be probably frustrated again and looking to move.
Yeah. Okay, so is there like a Grindr for women? Like, is that like, or...
Oh, good question.
Is there a game, right?
Oh, I don't know.
So
do y'all just, I feel like everybody just uses Tinder.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, I used Tinder. Fun fact, I'm actually banned from every website. Because when I moved to New Orleans, I was selling so much fucking weed on those dating apps, and they suspended me. So no more selling weed, no more dating apps, I guess.
Well, I mean,
I do see a lot of that.
Now you sell weed legally.
Exactly. No, I do sell weed legally. Like, it's cool. You know, shout out to the dispensary.
Yeah. Which one do you work for?
It's called Roots Remedy. It's on the corner of Meadowbrook and State in the old Hall & Bike Cleaners building. I love it. It's really chill. Like,
cool.
Yeah, it's a good group of people that own it. They like to support smaller, locally owned growers.
Yeah.
And it's like affordable. I'm all for that accessibility shit. So
yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna just ask a question. So I'm sober. I've been sober for 3 years.
Ooh.
Weed was my absolute best friend.
Hello.
Like I but here's the thing. I can't smoke weed like a gentleman. I will go back to meth and cocaine. Period.
You're
end of story.
As fuck.
So so like how It's difficult for me to wrap my head around. Like I totally believe that marijuana plays a role in a positive role in many thousands of people's lives. But I also know that for me, I couldn't smoke without getting severely depressed over time and then needing Adderall or an upper to bring me back up. So my question is, like, do you struggle with... Let me say this. Let me come at you from a stance of curiosity instead of judgmental
whatever.
Anything.
Yeah.
So I am curious about this. Like, do you believe that marijuana is a gateway drug? And we don't have to like go down into the weeds with this, but like.
Ooh. Into the weeds.
I like that.
Well, okay. Can I ask you a question before?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Did you ever only smoke weed or did you always do weed with other drugs?
No, my number one goal was to only smoke weed.
Like, okay, but you didn't. You always did other drugs.
Yeah, eventually I would get so depressed that I had to have an upper in order to bring me back to a level where I felt normal and
like,
okay.
Were you also drinking?
No, I've been drunk 4 or 5 times in my life.
Oh, okay. Yeah, do I believe that marijuana is a gateway drug?
Yeah.
Yes, I literally do. I do. I just feel like even when I look at like my own relationship with drugs, it's like, it's a double-edged sword. And I hate the term, like, gateway drug, because I assume they're like, oh.
I know, it sounds stupid, but,
like,
but
I hear you. Like, you know what I mean. I do, because I've also experimented with, like, psychedelics, and I feel like I would have never gotten to that point if I had never tried weed, like, right. straight up. So, for all practical purposes, I think, yes, it's a gateway drug. But my experiences with that drug have been mostly positive. I do feel you about, like, just, like, you know, smoking and then it just affecting, like, your work ethic and just getting fatigued and you're like, I got to caffeinate, I got to Adderall. And especially I feel like I ran into that problem when I didn't have access to dispensary weed and you're kind of, like, at the mercy of whatever the hell is on the street.
Right.
Yeah. But now I kind of, like, have a more tailored experience, if you will, or, like, I am smoking strains that make me feel productive because I have researched what strain this is, read about it, tried it, you know, not when I needed to do something, remembered the effects of it, found something similar that has similar terpenes, and I know that this setup is my daytime strain. And now I have, like, a different relationship with it where I feel like I am using it medicinally instead of, like, as a mental crutch, but it also took me a while to get to that. To that space.
So it was a process for you.
Absolutely fucking lutely. Yeah. I just got sober from alcohol. I learned that I'm what's called California sober.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's been a journey in itself. But I can definitely, like, identify you with that. Like,
Yeah. And again, like, I'm not like
good for you.
I think that marijuana has a place and it can be, like, especially for cancer patients, for people with you know, terminal illnesses or you know, really difficult diseases that keep you from wanting to eat. Like, I can eat all day long when I'm smoking weed, you know, and it's like, I get that. And I'm all for that. I'm just, my main concern really is kids getting it because kids, I started smoking weed when I was 13, 12 years old. So yeah, that's like, crazy. And it was like, it was immediate, like, this is my best friend. Like, this is my best friend.
That's, like, kind of scary.
But too. I stopped growing up as an individual when I started smoking weed. Like, I genuinely stopped growing up. So when I got sober at, you know, 36, 37, I was like a freaking 12, 13-year-old boy. And it was a lot of work that I had to do and lots of therapy to kind of get back to a point. And I still struggle. Like, my default is a scared child. Like, I can revert back to that just like that.
Okay.
But, you know, fortunately with a lot of therapy and stuff, I've been able to kind of get past that. But does it affect you negatively, like, as far as, like, depression is concerned? And do you have to, you know, do things to mitigate the risk of that happening? Or is it just a completely positive thing for you in your life?
It's like, I mean, I guess, like, nothing is completely positive because, like, weed costs money. And don't get me wrong, like, I would love to be using that money on something else. But it has been more positive than negative for me, so I'm sticking with it. But everything you said genuinely reminds me of my relationship with alcohol. Like, I felt like I started drinking really young. I started drinking when I was probably, like, 15, because it was just, like, the thing to do. Like, we would go get drinks before, like, homecoming or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I took time to get sober, I was like, damn, I cope with my emotions like a 15-year-old girl. Like, straight up. And so it took, like, just a lot of... like you said, just therapy, unpacking, learning, like, why I have these coping mechanisms.
And being willing to look at yourself,
and
too.
Being, like, willing to look at, like, the effing ugly.
Nothing's going to happen if you're not willing to look at yourself.
Dude, yeah, that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done, was not even giving up alcohol, was just fucking looking in the mirror and being like, damn, that, like, there's some shit.
We got some work to do.
My friend, there's some work to do.
For real. I mean, I also have, you know, a mostly positive relationship with weed. You know, I started therapy, like, at 13 instead of drugs. I started therapy.
The same girl. I was 14 in therapy.
I was already real sad before any of this came into my life.
Yeah.
Like, I was already real sad.
Heard that.
And, like, the first time I ever tried it, I was 17, and it was Earth Day. And
I love 3 days before 420.
I think it was after that year.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, And my friend had made like this hilarious like makeshift pipe out of like a clicky pin and like some masking tape and a lug nut. And it was like his goal to get to see what I was like high. Like he just had to know.
Yeah.
Cause I guess like I'm already pretty silly and like,
interesting.
You know, lighthearted. Yeah. And, you know, and he just made me rip the whole thing. Like,
damn.
Just the whole thing. And I just, it was great. I was just silly. It was fun.
You felt lighter.
I felt lighter. I've always been like a, like I got, I developed acid reflux in middle school, if that gives you an insight to how like actually uptight the inside of me is.
No, genuinely. I hear you.
Yeah. Then when I started college, I definitely started doing it more on a daily basis. And, you know, I feel like it brought my baseline down to, like, where other people's were.
I can identify with that, definitely. Yeah. I have, like, anxiety and shit, so, like...
It doesn't make your anxiety worse?
If I get the wrong sativa, it does.
Okay,
but
right.
Also, like, sativas are kind of hard to find, so, like, whatever. But
I've had an existential crisis on... But I was also, like, on... an anti-anxiety medicine that wasn't helpful.
Okay,
you know? Valid. So, like, you know, they mix together in, like, a really weird way.
Yeah, and also, like, I don't know. I hate to sound like one of those health nuts because, like, when I tell you I love french fries, like, I eat them every day. But also, like, making some changes in my diet helped me with that. Like, caffeine. I drink way, way less caffeine. Like, that makes me an anxious bitch. Like, seriously. And I noticed that. So when I'm smoking... and I'm not drinking caffeine, I feel better, like, straight up.
Yeah. My experience with weed is a little different because the first time I tried it, I was 28.
Wow.
I was 28. And
what grown-ass woman.
I was so grown. I was so grown because I didn't drink until I was 21. Like, I didn't experiment with anything when I was younger, but I was 28, and I didn't know that my... I didn't know that my ex-husband was a cocaine addict and was doing a shitload of drugs.
Dude, they sneaky, bro.
They are. He never brought it into the house ever.
Word.
I think he only kept it in the car and did it at work. But he like magically had weed one time because my friends who were a doctor and a lawyer would smoke all the time. And I was like, doctor and lawyer, like in my brain, like that was not what they did with their free time, they like convinced me to smoke with them for the first time and it put me to sleep. And then they convinced me to do it again and it put me to sleep. And so I found out that it just puts me to sleep. It doesn't matter the strand. It doesn't matter anything. Nothing. It puts me to sleep. And so when I found out that I had narcolepsy, when I was 30, and then that next January, it was legalized. I was like, for me, you know, it can help me sleep at night.
Sweet.
So that's what I use it for. I don't take it all the time. And I'm actually moving to another drug, which I should start in the next month, which is technically GHB. It's called sodium oxybate. That's like the medical name, it's like real, real bad shit on the street. Like it's the most
you don't want to drink at the bar.
No, it's the most controlled. Like people who are listening, if you don't know, it's street use is a date rape drug. So
yeah,
it's pretty wild.
That's some shit.
It's like the most controlled substance. You can only get it if you have narcolepsy. That's like literally the only way you can get it. And it has to be shipped to your house.
Oh, shit.
Like to your front door. So. That's
high profile.
Yeah.
That's intense. Yeah. Also, it's very expensive, is it not?
Yeah, it's like $25,000 a month.
What?
Before insurance or anything. So... that's like the out of pocket cost.
And people are giving that shit away for free at the bar to people. That shit is crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, 25. What's your cost?
I don't know yet. They're sending me my first month for free. And then I'm going to go on patient assistance. So I don't know because my insurance doesn't cover it.
Of course not, bro. Yeah. Like, that's too high.
But the because narcolepsy is a rare disease, it there's like a lot of assistance for it. So I don't know what I'll have to end up paying. Hopefully nothing, because one of my drugs that I take that's like $14,000 a month, I don't have to pay anything for, because my insurance pays part of it, and then the rest the pharmaceutical company pays for, which I'm sure they just write off.
Yeah,
it's crazy. That's, it's so crazy that medications can cost that much. You know, like
so wild.
They're making money hand over fist. Dude. They're just raking in the dough.
And the fact that the price is that high, they still pay for half of it for you. Like that's yeah. That's just a setup.
It's wild. Okay. I know. There's another drug.
It's like every penny I've ever saved. Like
yeah. I know. Like in every one fell swoop. Yeah. There's one other drug that my insurance, I just changed insurance, doesn't pay for it. And they were like, that'll be $2,000. And I was like, nope. I just am not taking that one anymore.
Yeah, really.
Like, because there's no other option. It's just you pay $2,000 a month or you don't have it. So,
they try to do that with me with Vyvanse. Like, I mean, I wound up going to like Ritalin, like PCT or something. Like, it hadn't been manufactured since the 60s.
Oh my.
I was like, I'll take that. Like, I can afford that.
They put my brother on Ritalin when they were little, when he was little, and he literally pulled out like a bald spot in his hair.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, it does the exact same thing as meth for me.
It actually is.
Yeah.
And like, kind of how we were talking about, speaking of gateway drugs, almost every dude I've ever talked to in recovery was diagnosed with like ADHD when they were a little kid and put on Ritalin.
Yeah, it primes us. It primes you.
It's called methylphenidate. So
It's methamphetamine is the technical name for it. Like that's a pill.
Meth is the main ingredient.
Yeah, maybe. they can literally write like you can get it at the pharmacy.
Like, and when you start somebody on that kind of stuff so young, they never know what it's like to actually regulate their own system, their own emotions, and so you have set them up for
coping with drugs,
right?
Coping with anything.
Yeah.
But see, my parents feel super, super guilty about that. Like I was 8 years old when I started on that. And like, still to this day, I'm so sorry, honey, that we did that. We were just trying to do what's right for you.
Mama just went up to dinner, please.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's definitely like my parents definitely struggled with that they, you know, but I think I'm 100% certain that I would have found meth anyways, but
okay,
because that's my jam.
Are you from Mississippi?
No, I'm from Dallas. I grew up
there
in Dallas.
There we go. All right.
And then did some. I lived in Ventura, California, for 3 years.
Oh shit!
And that's where like I had my first meth, and like that's real meth. Like the shit you get in Mississippi is not like.
No, that's Breaking Bad. That's, meth.
Yeah, it was insane. It was insane. But yeah, we. I don't know why we got him on that, but
we're here at the meth talk, bro. Yeah. That's real shit, though. That's real fucking shit.
Yeah, I'm absolutely 100% against putting kids on stimulants.
Yeah, no, it's no.
Maybe
good.
It's like Strattera or something that's like non-stimulant, and like I think a hyper kid is a hyper fucking kid. Like, give them something to.
They need to be stimulated with something. Like,
I've been a preschool teacher, you know, and I would never not. It was like a year, you know, not like prolonged, but I would never like recommend to a parent.
Yeah.
Like that, I'm like no. But also, I was at Montessori, so the kids could, like, pick what they wanted
to do.
Yeah, they could pick what they wanted to do. Yeah.
As a teacher, in rare cases, and normally, most of the time has been, like, middle school, high school teaching, like, rarely I would see a kid. And I can think of, like, in 10 years of teaching, like, maybe two kids that were unmedicated and, like,
that's scary.
Legit needed some type of stimulant to be able to like focus. But the number of kids that are on it, I've seen more kids who are like zombied out by it more than like getting help from it.
Yeah, definitely. I used to take Vyvanse like in college and stuff, and I just felt like, I don't know, I didn't sleep well on it. Like I had really bad insomnia, didn't have an appetite, but was still gaining weight. It was like so weird. Like it was just, it was just not a fun time for me, truly.
Yeah, I have to take Adderall in the day to stay awake. Like, I tried the non-stimulant versions of the meds that they have for narcolepsy, mm-hmm. and, like, they were, one, I was, like, felt like my heart was going to explode for half the day.
That's scary.
And then another one was, it just didn't work at all. But, like, I think in some cases, like, if a kid's literally falling asleep because they have narcolepsy, like, maybe a little dose of a stimulant, like, your body has to have it to function, because we don't have the neurotransmitter in our brain that promotes wakefulness. And so, like, really, there's not an amount of stimulants that is, like, too stimulating for me, because I'm always, like, pretty much falling asleep.
Yeah, you're like, I'm already half asleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of sounds shitty.
I didn't know. Like, for most of my life, I was.
What did you do up until you were diagnosed? You just thought you were tired?
I took a lot of naps, like, and so many. But it took me 12 years to get diagnosed, because I started, like, seeking a diagnosis when I was, like, 17, 18, because I was struggling. I got mono then. And I think that triggered a lot of it. I think I've always had it, but I think it made it worse. And I was just, like, taking a lot of naps, like, in between every class in college, I took naps. Every time I would come home from work, I would take a nap when I was teaching. And it got to a point where I was, like, falling asleep in my planning period. Mm-hmm. And, like, one time my principal walked in on me. He, like, keyed into the door, and I was, like, full on asleep. And he was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yep, doing great."
Okay, brother.
Yeah. Okay. I never fell asleep in class, thank goodness. But yeah. It just, like, it progressed to where I was, like, not awake if I sat down.
Yeah, yeah, in that case, like, I mean, I got no problems with Adderall and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah,
that's a safety, I got no concern. Problem. Yeah, I got no problem. Yeah,
like, you're good. I don't know. I took it and I felt like I was on drugs.
Yeah. What, Adderall?
Yeah.
XR or regular?
I don't know.
Were they like the red pills?
No.
No.
Capsules?
The capsules are the extended release. Yeah. If yeah.
They were,
like,
not extended
tablets.
Release.
Okay, yeah, so the tablets are instant.
It was instant because I took it. I took it to take down my art show, my senior thesis art show, when mm-hmm. I, like, graduated college, and it literally took 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I was like, I have way too much energy, and my heart is beating way too fast, and mm-hmm. it won't stop, and it's been hours now, and I don't know what to do.
No, for real.
I used to chop those jokers up.
Yeah, but...
Why?
Done. Bro, no. That's how I felt one time when I had a triple shot of espresso on Starbucks.
I've never had espresso that made me feel like snorting an Adderall.
My heart would probably...
there was absolutely Adderall in that espresso that you had.
I probably wanted to go back into that. I really do. Yeah, my heart was, like, palpitating, genuinely.
I feel that.
Mine will do that when I get triggered, and that's why I'm on propanolol.
Oh my gosh.
We're an eclectic bunch here.
Yeah. We all are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Do you have a medical card?
I don't. I could get one for my PTSD, but I don't have one.
That's why I got one for my. Yeah.
Ooh, oh. I got one because I have tummy issues.
Hey, the GI. Okay, we stand.
Yeah. That's. I also have PTSD.
I need to find the form you filled out for everything.
Yeah, it's just on.
I mean, it's not hard to get a card, is it?
Not at all.
Yeah, like they. I mean, that's tax dollars for them. Like, they're gonna help you.
You're
gonna get approved.
Lana had it in, like, a couple days.
Yeah. Mine in, like, 3 days.
Oh, you have your finger hurts? Absolutely. Yeah, here.
You qualify.
Boy, do we have a solution for you?
Yeah.
It really helps with arthritis and stuff like that.
I believe
so
that.
Much.
I believe
we
that.
Have a lot of elderly patients that come into the dispensary, and
I bet people would be surprised it. How many elderly folks come in.
Arthritis is crippling, especially when you get older. Like, I feel like that took out my grandmother more than anything else is because, like, she got to the point where she couldn't walk.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And then she was over it.
And I'm, like, I'm 100%, I am pro-marijuana. If marijuana works for you and you don't have to take an opiate for pain, like, 1,000% go with the marijuana every single time. Yes, like, yes. 100%.
We have a lot of people
opioids
that come in.
Super bad.
Yeah, they get referrals from their pain management programs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, I stopped taking Oxy, and now I just smoke weed. I'm like, that's right. Fucking awesome.
That's a win.
Yeah, yes,
that's a win. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, period.
Yeah. I watched that show on Netflix recently. It's like a document, like a dramatic documentary. I don't know what you call this, but...
Docudrama.
Yeah, it's called Painkillers. So it's like they have actors. Like,
is it the doctor that gets addicted?
No, it's there's like
after a car wreck. What was the name of that?
I don't know.
It was about the.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
But it talks about the pharmaceutical company and kind of like their hand in it in the opioid crisis and how they got sued.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
Now they're responsible for that.
My brother was definitely affected by the opioid crisis. Like, he got hooked on them when he was in the army because they were just feeding them to him.
Yeah,
and you know, and then when he got out, couldn't afford that, so it you know
right heroin
became
fentanyl.
Hello,
yeah. It was heroin. Yeah.
But like one of. We had a guest on, I've got a recovery podcast, and one of our guests was, she's in charge of Mississippi Harm End It For Good, which is a harm reduction.
Cool.
To where, like, they, like, she presents the question, like, is it better for a drug dealer to be giving out this substance, this heroin or fentanyl to a patient that can't get their medicine anymore? Or is it better to not be busting doctors' balls and allow them to treat pain? Like, it goes both ways. Like,
I agree.
I mean, I personally, and until Christina Dent came on the program, I was kind of like, you know what, like, no, like, the pharmaceutical companies, they're like, it's, they're devils, they're awful. But then when she presented this question, like, you know, who do we want to be in control of these people's medications? A doctor, a trained medical professional, or the cartels that don't give a shit about anything? Right. So it goes both ways. Like, I think that doctors should be able to prescribe opiate medications. I think that, you know, there are absolutely people need opiate medications because they work. They work very, very effectively. So it goes both ways. Like, I'm not so much like anti-opiates anymore. Like, I never enjoyed them. It was never my thing, but I think there's a place for those too.
I have a question about that. Because when I think about it from, I guess what I have experience in with the pharmaceutical is like an antidepressant. But antidepressants weren't designed for you to be on them the rest of your life. Yeah. Mm. So are opioids designed to be you on them for the rest of your life?
No.
Unless it's end of life care.
Right.
I mean, it
hospice,
should be.
Like.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. You know.
I think.
But some people have persistent
are they designed for you to be on them like 30, 40 years?
No, because your body becomes used to them and then you need more and more and more. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's physiological.
But
that's what happens.
Especially if you can't afford to actually treat the root issue of the pain, and it could be like a surgery.
Right.
Or, you know, it's like something that, I don't know, people can't afford to take care of. So you're kind of left dependent on this pill for your mobility, for your comfort.
Yeah. Right.
And marijuana doesn't have those same side effects. You don't have.
Nobody's ever died from a marijuana overdose.
Oh. Right.
Period. End of story.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen.
And literally like 100,000 people die a day from opiate overdose.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
It's dangerous.
I don't know. I don't think they have much of a place. But like you said, if people need them at this point in time, it is like, I don't know. It is the most accessible option for some people, so you kind of have to like honor that. Like, you can't push them away from that.
And each person is different, you know. Like, it's a tough job for a doctor. Like, you know, is this person drug seeking or are they genuinely in pain? Like, a lot of times, there's not a test that says, "Oh yeah, this person is in pain." Yeah. Like, so doctors have it shitty too, you know.
They do.
Like, in a lot of ways, and then they've got the the government breathing down their neck. Like, well, what'd you do right there? What was that right there? What was that right there?
Threatening
like,
their license. Their
yeah, exactly. Like their livelihood.
Yeah.
It's a shitty situation.
It's a terrible situation.
Yeah.
You know, I left medicine like a while ago. I started, I don't know, like on a pre-med route in college, and I've dropped out since then. I have like 9 credit hours left, if I'm being honest, but I don't know. I may go back to school. I may not. I started working in a hospital right before COVID started. So I feel like I just learned really quickly that that was like not the industry for me. It was just like a lot of racism, just watching like black people get discharged from the hospital because their insurance no longer wanted to cover their treatment.
And, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah,
or they just, don't have insurance.
Or they don't have it at all.
I've never had it. Dude, yeah. I don't have good experiences.
No, that's real. That's real. Like, and they don't, the knowledge to obtain affordable insurance is not widely accessible. Like, people are like, yeah, you can set up a marketplace, but like,
what exactly is marketplace? Like, exactly. how does that work?
It's so expensive,
like,
too.
It's not helpful.
It can be really expensive.
Yeah.
And like, I pay $500 a month.
Yeah. And also, like, I was on the marketplace when I was married. Like, we got our insurance through the marketplace, and it covered nothing.
It covers nothing.
It covered absolutely nothing.
And you're paying out of pocket, and, like, that's worse. I'm just like, well, I could have just gone without insurance at this point.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like
the Which cheapest. Is what I do.
But then it's like,
I've been doing like, it since the, I aged off.
They have you like, well, what if? Like, what if you have like a horrible car accident, you know? Like, I mean, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but the ER is not going to tell you no.
Right, exactly. I mean, but you're going to get that bill.
You will get a
You're going to get that bill. You'll Absolutely. Get a They'll your take house. Care of you right there.
Yes. Yes.
It does roll off your credit in 5 years.
That's Ooh. True. That's true.
Yeah. Ethical life pro tips.
I know my insurance, like I said, it's like $500 a month through the marketplace.
Just for you alone?
Yeah, just for me, because I.
You got dental?
It's like $12. Oh, okay. The dental's like $12 a month.
Oh man, that's what I need.
But I have to have it because I have to have these medications. Like, it's not an option because I'm chronically ill.
Yeah,
I can't just like, if $500 keeps me from paying $14,000, okay, like.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
That's my option.
Period.
A real good deal.
It's a great deal.
Yeah.
Or $25K.
Or $25K. Yeah, whenever that goes through, we'll see.
Okay.
I can't even.
It's like a car.
Yeah, the medical. Yeah, like the. Yeah, it is.
And that drug probably costs like $4 to make or something. $3 to $4.
It is a medication that used to be made in bathtubs in the 50s. Like, truly.
Meth?
Yeah, right.
But it's
no. This one's GHB. To knock you out.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right.
The opposite.
Their own medications, unfortunately, but, like not what? Like. So I'm here for that shit. Making your own medicine.
Yeah. No,
it works.
I know a girl who was on the phone with the pharmacy, like the pharmacy, for this specialty medication, and her insurance wasn't covering. They weren't going to cover it. And the lady was like, I mean, they used to make it in bathtubs. And was like telling her to make it.
That, I mean, but like real shit. Like at this point,
yeah.
I mean, if I could make my mood stabilizer, I definitely would,
dude. Like I had like, you know, a prescription for Adderall or whatever, and like the shortage, air quote, whatever.
Yeah. No, the shortage is real.
It is real, that but is it's real. Like not real. Like they can definitely just make more fucking Adderall.
Oh right. Yeah, not
real.
But difficult.
We're here. It's short. So yeah. I've like just I don't know. I've been seeking natural alternatives. Like I started adding lion's mane mushroom, like powder,
mm-hmm.
to my tea. It's not like, it's not the same, you know, gin as an Adderall, but like it got me there. Like I felt like focused and like clear headed. So
yeah,
I don't know. I've just been experimenting that. I'm not making my own drugs in the bathtub yet, but I am going to the herbal shop. So yeah, I feel like it's been helpful, especially like managing my anxiety.
Yeah, because
if it's helpful, it's helpful.
I use a really good local.
I like Kava. You know, that's helped me before.
Oh, where do you get it from?
Wait, what? Kava?
Mm-hmm.
What is Kava?
It's like a herb, and it's calming, and like sometimes you can get shots of it at like I don't know. We don't have anything like this, but like it used to be called Urban Juicer, and then like or like it. Fancy, I don't know, tea places maybe.
Yeah.
But it's just like a powder. You just mix it with, you know, water, whatever. And but the effects are pretty temporary. You know, that's the problem I've had with a lot of like holistic remedies is like, I loved acupuncture. I felt great afterwards, but then it would wear off, you know?
How long would you say, like, in something that made it feel like not worth it for you? You're like, oh, I have to go back too regularly.
Well, I also haven't, like, I just recently got on medication that helps, like, at the beginning of last year. And speaking of, like, quitting things is, like, I was completely sober. I didn't smoke weed. I didn't drink for, like, 7 months just so I made sure, like,
you had a baseline.
This is the baseline of this working and, like, you know.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to give this all I got.
Yeah. And, you know, and then after that, I was like, okay, maybe I can, you know, smoke weed or, like, have a drink for fun. But it's, Morgan took me out for the first time. I had been
was it that time?
I had been sober from alcohol since I was like 27. Like, damn. I started tattooing and I'm like, I am not ever showing up to tattoo somebody hungover.
Yeah,
like,
real.
I am not putting I'm not giving them that Molly. Like, nobody wants that Molly imbued into your skin forever. Cause I am grumpy. I hate myself. Like,
energy transfer. Yeah. Thank you for being considerate of your clients.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
A big deal.
Yeah, I have to be careful with alcohol because it makes me sleepy too. It's a depressant. So, like, I'm always the DD because I can have like one drink and still be like all right to, and like everyone will be having like 3 or 4 drinks throughout the whole night, and I've had one, and I'm like, I'm good to drive. It's been 4 hours with one drink.
Yeah,
but otherwise, I'm like, there's the danger of me falling asleep while driving, even if I have, like, 2 in 2 hours, which would technically make me, like, under the legal limit. But, like, it just doesn't work because I'm too sleepy.
Yeah, real. Yeah. Know your limits. Know yourself.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And once I start this nighttime medication, the sodium oxybate, I won't be able to drink at all.
At all.
Yeah. Like, not even a one here or there. It'll be goodbye alcohol. I'll be sober.
Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Yes.
Yeah. So are you, like, not sleeping through the night currently? Are your nights?
No. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, because it's daytime sleepiness, excessive daytime sleepiness, and disrupted nighttime sleep. So, like, I stay in REM sleep like 60 to 75% of the time, which is like double what a normal person does. And wake at the anytime I go in and out of REM sleep, I wake up.
Mm.
So I'm not like awake like this, but like my brain's awake.
Yeah.
And so it's not sustained and I don't really get deep sleep at all.
Yeah. You're not getting a restful sleep.
Yeah.
It's like miserable. You're making it tired and shit.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like you didn't even sleep at all.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, even if it's like 12 hours of sleep.
What do you have, like, what are your dreams like?
Very vivid and long. Like, I go straight into REM sleep. It's called, like, sleep onset REM. And so people who have narcolepsy, when they fall asleep, they go straight into REM sleep.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's like we have sleep paralysis a lot because you go straight into, like, a dream state while you're, right when you go to sleep.
Yeah.
And so I can like lay down for like a 20-minute nap and I'll have a dream.
That's
weird.
Like, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yo, for real.
I didn't know it wasn't normal. Yeah, like, those are things that I had no idea weren't normal when I was like growing up.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I thought everyone just like dreamt a lot and like went straight into dreaming and like could hear things that are going on around them when they were like going to bed, because for the first like, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is, like I can still hear what's going around me. And I just thought I was like fake sleeping, like when I was a kid. Like, I really thought I was.
Was it? But is that like the paralysis of it? Can you move when you're hearing it?
Okay. I can't. Mm-hmm. No.
I would just immediately be like, I'm haunted. I like watched way too many ghost shows when I was like, I'm haunted. Yeah. I have like a sleep I got a sleep demon.
It's been like that my whole life, too, though. Yeah. So, like, I didn't know it was different from anybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
So, at what point you're like, are you having a different experience than I am? Like,
Yeah. It was when the daytime sleepiness got really bad when I was, like, 18, 19 that I started, like, looking for a reason. And they were like, oh, chronic fatigue. Oh, you have stomach issues. Oh, it's this or that. It'll get better when you're out of college. It'll get better when you're out of your first year teaching. It'll get better when you're like 5 years into teaching. And like, it just kept getting worse.
Dude, that's crazy. What a runaround, too. And you're like having to pay all these doctors to tell you it'll get better later.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Oh. Or that it's my diet, you know how doctors are. It's your diet, or yeah, it's your.
What if you like lost like 10 pounds?
Perhaps you were faking.
Yeah. Could be.
How'd y'all get into comedy?
I started 4 years ago. Cool. I think April 4th was like my fourth anniversary of doing comedy, and I actually went on a cruise and I was like, I've always been like real weird and performative, but I started like the first night the cruise director was like singing a song and like started singing to me, and I was like, oh hell yeah, and like got really into it, and we like did a whole bit for like 5 days of like we were fake dating, we were dating, and everyone on the ship would come up to me. They thought I worked on they thought I worked for a carnival.
That's funny.
Like, it was so funny. Oh, that's like funny. It was just so goofy. And at the end, Andy was like, "You have to do stand up," and I was like, "No, I can't do stand up." He's like, "You have to.
You have to. You committed to the bit."
Yeah, he's like, "You've got to. You're so funny." And I was like, "Okay," and because he started out on the cruises as a comedy director. I don't know what they call it, but that's what he started like hosting in the comedy club.
Do you still talk with him?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. He's from Preston in the UK. And so like we still keep in touch, but I started taking a class online because it was the pandemic. I didn't have any other option.
Wait, that's dope.
Yeah, and so I started doing comedy online, and then started doing it once things kind of woke up.
Yeah,
doing it here when there was a mic. So
sweet.
Yeah. What about? Well, wait. I know Molly's.
Yeah. Oh, I've always been pretty performative. Like when I was in art school, I did a lot of performance art, and like, you know, people laugh at me and like think I'm funny. And I think I've always been interested in trying stand-up, but then when Lana got the opportunity to host at Helen Mao's, I was like, I want to try it. And she was just like, let's go.
The inspo. I love that. Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
I do have a theater background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we all do. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Visual.
I was also saying, I think this is like theater kid pipeline. You either like do this, or you like pick up acts at New Stage, or you try to like go to New York and be on Broadway or something. But
yeah,
definitely started doing theater. I was at a bar in New Orleans, and this producer was there. I was doing karaoke. I was like drunk as shit. She's like, "You have great stage presence. Like, have you ever thought about being a comic?" And I was like, No, I haven't, but I'll try it. And I did like a show at this place called Always Lounge in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And there was like another producer there, and he booked me. And then like I got booked again and just like again. So I just like kept going like that. Yeah.
I also hosted a couple burlesque shows and it was always funny, you know?
That's cool. Yeah. You were like, oh, they're laughing at me. Wait, okay.
Yeah. Like I would be explaining the blue laws and like everybody would just be like dying.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. When I did like one of my best friends, maid of honor speeches, I had like essentially written a stand up set. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing, yeah, it was like people were cracking up the whole time. And I was like, that like was kind of put in my brain that like maybe I could do comedy. Like people were laughing. They thought it was funny. And That was right before I went on that cruise.
Oh,
yeah. It like kind of lined up.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. But my friends, like the friends I went with on the cruise were all other teachers, and we were just like goofing off the whole time. And they thought it was so funny. And there was another teacher from our school with her husband. Like, they were both teachers at our school. And they were on the cruise and were like, what is happening with Lana? Like, came back and, like, told all the other teachers, like, that's not real. And she's like, I swear to you it's real. Because, like, she was on the same hallway with me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what y'all are talking about. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Yo, you committed to the bit. Everyone's fucking confused.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Cruises are the best.
Dude, I've never been on a
cruise. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It is so fun. Yeah.
They're incredible.
It's so incredible. Fun. There's so much to do all the time. Like, you don't ever have to be bored. Like, you can go to a show. You can go, like...
How's the food?
Oh, my God.
Good?
And, like, we went, like, completely sober, too. Like, there's incredible things to do, like, completely sober. Like, yeah. You don't have to, like, be drunk all the time. Like, and there was, an AA meeting literally every single night there on the meeting.
That's so
on the
cute.
Ship, too.
What the hell?
So, like... If you drink, if you don't drink, like, there's definitely something for you to do on a cruise.
That.
It's and everything is included. You just go into the.
It's so affordable.
You just eat your. Just eat until you drop.
Maybe we'll go on a cruise.
Yeah. What,
How much was it? How much is it for like a carnival cruise?
It was like for the 5 days. I think it was like $400.
That's like
sick. So it's like less than $100 a day for all your food and like going. Like I didn't do any excursions or anything cause they get expensive, but like if you get someone who knows a little bit about the area to like tell you where to go or like, where can I get good tacos or where can I do this? Like they'll tell you and like kind of explore the, like if you get out of the tourist area, you can kind of explore like.
But be careful if you get out of that tourist area.
You gotta be careful, yeah.
Especially if you're in Mexico.
Yeah, but we're from Jackson. We're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
We know how to handle ourselves.
But yeah, it's fun. And it is like per day, it's like so affordable.
Yeah.
I'm into that shit. Maybe
and the food is just epic. Like, it's just incredible. Like, we went scuba diving. Mm-hmm. And usually, you know, you have to get like, you know, certified in America, but... No. We're in Mexico, baby.
No, baby.
You did. Try this. You did a. Outlaw. It was like a 15 to 20 minute tutorial in the water with like the regulator and like the tanks, and then you fucking go scuba diving.
No, like, that's so funny.
It was like in the whole area. It was like just incredibly beautiful, and like to be able to breathe underwater and just like see these fish and stuff. I mean, it's out of this world. Like, We're absolutely going to go on another cruise. They're phenomenal. Dude, absolutely phenomenal.
Misguidance cruise.
Hey.
Misguidance. Yeah.
Podcast cruise. I'm into it.
All of our past guests, when we, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, all of us on a ship. That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I mean.
So fun.
And this might be a hot take, but like an interior room is the best because.
I don't know. We had a balcony.
Ooh. There's no. I've been with a balcony and without. The balcony was nice. It was nice to sit out and like have a place to watch the water. But when you have no windows in the room, it gets so dark. You can take the best fucking nap.
That's funny.
But who goes on a cruise to take naps?
Our narcoleptic.
I mean,
that's right.
That's so funny.
But like sleeping at night and everything like is so like the boat rocks a little bit, and you're just like sleeping like.
Oh, that's basic.
I'm not even gonna lie. My ideal sleeping conditions are pitch black and ice cold. Like like the cave.
Yeah.
Something I'm just into. Short of a casket. That's what
I did that when I was a kid. That's
it's too confined. Yeah. I need a little
weighted blanket.
Yeah.
All right,
I need air on my face. Absolutely. Gotta have the fan.
All right, so we're at 59 minutes now. We usually wrap up around an hour. Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you got coming up in the next like 6 months to a year? What you're excited about? What you're feeling? What you're not feeling? And then we'll wrap it up after that.
Yo, all right, 60 seconds. Next 6 months. Let's go.
You can take more than 60 seconds.
This Saturday we have the day rave coming up. I'm really really excited about
and how
that.
People can get in touch with you if you want that.
Of course. I use Instagram predominantly. My Instagram handle is Afton Captain. Kaftan, Kaftan, spelled like Captain, you know, just like Google it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I usually try to keep everyone posted about the things that I do there, but the ADHD be doing it.
It'd be like that sometimes.
It's tough out here, bro. But yeah, this Saturday we're doing the Day Rave in Fungin Park.
Yeah, which is all ages.
It is all ages. Yes, I'm really excited about that. Just also like an initiative, just trying to expose everyone to EDM. I feel like house music, EDM, all the shit that, you know, will be played on Saturday is, it's more about like forming a community. And yeah, that shit is all ages. And I want to get some younger people excited about the underground scene. So when they're old enough to come to the club, they can. But yeah, we'll do that Saturday. We got Venom, Offbeat record shop owner, Flusif, he's in the Downbeat band. Tyler Tatlock, he goes by Spirituals. And we have two DJs from Memphis coming in, Chemist and DJ Nico. So I'm really excited about that. We'll also be doing another rave on 601 day. So that's the next date. I'm really excited about that. I'll actually be doing a lot of things on 601 day. Offbeat is having a skateboarding contest. Cool. And it'll just be teams come and do tricks in front of different checks and establishments to earn points for the competition. And the more you get involved in the city, the more tricks
like
you
a
do.
Scavenger hunt?
A scavenger hunt, baby. Nice. Like,
yeah,
go.
They did that. They called it King of Cashville in Nashville.
Yes, yes, dude. Okay, yeah, literally something similar. Yeah, so you'll get points and earn not money, but notoriety. But it's also just like a community mixer event. And Community Collapse will be doing some stuff. We'll be taking some Southern DJs up to Chicago in May. And we'll be trying to do some more of that. So if you're a DJ in Jackson and Mississippi in the South, please follow Community Collapse on Instagram. And we're going to try to, like, I don't know, get you to perform in some other scenes and just kind of mix stuff up. So that's what we're working on. And I don't know, just more events in Jackson. I think we'll be doing like a quarterly, some monthly, just to get some house music going consistently.
And the comedy open mic is second Monday?
A second Monday every month at BAC. Always doing that. Rotating host as well. So if you guys ever want to, like, host that show,
I'd be flattered.
Dude, yes, yes, please come. We created it just so we could all practice. And one thing that comics all need practice with is hosting. So definitely.
Also, as a visual artist, do you have any, like, you know, need for that or opportunities for young artists to, like, have, do y'all have art shows? Do y'all do murals?
Dude,
like,
literally. So it's crazy because, like, honestly, all artists, like, please send them my way, because even if, like, I don't have a project for them personally, I know a guy that knows a guy. Mm-hmm. Like the store that I work at, they just recently hired someone to come paint a mural, found out that dude was a skater. So it's kind of like
cool.
Just keeping artists hired. We all need something. Like, I'm always looking for someone to design flyers.
Holler at your girl, because I need some in-between capital.
No, seriously, yeah. I'm always looking for people to help out with gigs, help me, like, organize stuff. If somebody wants to come, you know, take over the Community Collaborative Instagram page at one point. Like, that's something I'm also open to. So definitely want to, like, just, you know, keep people in Jackson with gigs and just keep this thing sustainable.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. Thank you guys for having me. This is really cool.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming.
I mean.
Yeah, I was so excited when you said yes.
No, I had to make time for this. I really did. Thank you.
Well, it means a lot to us. And I thought this was one of our best episodes. So thanks for coming. And we have you to thank for that. So
no, yeah, thank you. This was so lovely.
All right, guys. We'll see you. We'll see you next Tuesday at 5 p.m. 5:30 p.m.
Maybe
the next time.